This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper, and if you just want to have fun, do you? Keep listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello, and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's Chris here, welcoming back our little travelling type person. Hello, Gordon, you found your way back?
Hello, Chris. Yes, I did find my way back, very easily though.
But you went wandering far and wide.
Right round the coast, up to Batemans Bay, then across to Canberra, and then back down to Albury and home again.
And how long did this take you?
5 days.
Many kangaroosters on the road?
I saw a few dead ones, but not live ones.
Oh!
Couple of wombats as well, but it's one of those things that you see on country roads, which is unfortunate.
You certainly do. Mm. And hello, Phil.
That would be me, waiting patiently in the wings after we hear Gordon's life story again.
Oh, there's a lot
now,
more.
Now, how many dingbats did you see?
Eh?
How many dingbats?
Oh, a few in Canberra, I can tell you.
So no. You actually went to the House of Fools?
The Liar's Lair, yes. Yes.
Up in Canberra.
Yes. It's a beautiful building. It is a magnificent building. And it, you could see where the money's been spent on it, of course. But we couldn't get in to see Question Time because we didn't have tickets. And you have to get a ticket to get into that. So we didn't.
But you pay your rates and taxes.
Yeah,
and
but
you're an Australian.
I think it's fair to say to get into Parliament, you've got to have tickets on yourself.
Oh, naturally. You certainly do, Phil. It's a beautiful city, is Canberra. And they're putting in a railway line down the middle of the city.
Not a railway line,
light rail, they call
yes,
it.
Yes,
a light rail
line.
Is a tram line, yeah. Right down Northbourne Avenue.
That's enough. It's about us.
It's about us. Yes, but there you go. And how have you been? What did you have a good show while I was away?
We had a show.
Much editing and everything, yes, and we got it done.
We are a team of three. Don't forget it.
Oh, all right. Okay. I'll put in an application a long time ahead so you can plan.
Yeah, well, indeed. Thank you. Thanks for being with us. This is Joy's History Program, or History Program about our gay community. People known to us, near and far, events that have taken place, or if we get a little bit short of topics, other events that have occurred around this neck of the woods that are still important for us.
But no fake news. It's all real news.
On the 1st of March in the year 1975, here in Australia, something useful happened.
Something glorious happened.
Well,
something real purdy happened. We got colour to our television, which a lot of people would say, what? Why did you ever not have it?
Well, sometimes see black and white movies on the colour TV, and just imagine if everything was black and white. We are so grateful that colour TV was introduced to Australia 1st of March 1975 because it meant that if we'd been watching a Mardi Gras at that particular time, it would have looked pretty drab in black and white.
We have to thank Auntie Jack for allowing us to have colour TV because she fought it. She held it down. The colour was coming up her screen and she rejected it and resisted all she could.
It was a very novel way.
It was actually quite clever.
Auntie Jack was a very clever show.
I don't know how they technically managed that.
Well, she stayed in black and white, so there would have been a chroma key type situation where she was actually not on the camera that was showing us the colour.
Oh.
Trickery on television, imagine that. And that was before the days of Photoshop.
Well, once again, Mardi Gras was a marvellous celebration.
A glittering spectacle. Yes. And being Sydney, it was just a little bit of rain.
Can I just say one word of praise for Joy 94.9? Over the weekend, they had a wonderful, wonderful program of the whole
yes,
for the Mardi Gras
we
weekend.
We did.
We did have a wonderful, it made me proud to just sit and listen to it. Yeah.
Well, I know member number one, John Oliver, has been on the phone already and heaping praise on the rest of the crew, all the volunteers and the professionals that we had bringing us that marvellous event and the programming before it and the programming after it.
Mm-hmm.
It was marvellous to see the multiculturalism, the diversity, the professionals and the corporates even.
You know the one that really made it outstanding for me were the sister girls.
Oh, from the TV Islands.
The TV Islands, because they'd had them on the ABC the night before, or two nights before, getting ready to come down to for the Mardi Gras. And they were so excited, you know, and I thought they were really, really wonderful. Yeah.
It must be a bit of a shock to their system to suddenly come from an oasis of their own single community in remote Australia down to Sydney and all the buzz and hype and mobs of people.
Yeah.
But they are incredible, though, because they're in a culture and a society where you really wouldn't expect them to be accepted.
They are accepted.
Yeah.
As sister girls, yes.
And openly, and it just seems incredibly normal for them. Whereas we haven't really reached that same level yet. We just can't do it for some reason.
It's the influence of the church having turned our minds into, you know, black and white, into
binary.
Adam and Eve. And none other.
Well, there could have been Adam and Steve, but we don't read about it, do we?
No. Well, John Howard made sure there was only Adam and Eve.
Yes, that's true too.
There was such a diversity of the diversity as well. And I don't know that I actually saw anything, any group there that I identified with individually, but collectively I felt, wow, this is a real statement and a half. And accepted by the people of Sydney, all standing along out on the street, watching it all.
Again, I didn't see myself, but it was really good for like portable shopping trolleys going past. You just say, oh, take that one and that one and that one.
You put a lay-by sticker on.
I don't see myself, but I see my future ex-boyfriend.
But I've done three or four Mardi Gras parades, been in four of them, I think. And they're always rather fun. They're rather fun to be in, but you stand around and wait for a long time before you get going. Which
and it would
is
be hot and sticky, wouldn't
but
it?
You have to be in the enclosure by 5 o'clock and you don't move until 8 o'clock. And if you're right down the end of the parade, well, you've still got another 2 hours to wait after that.
Oh.
No wonder they're so happy to move.
Oh. We had an introduction to the show by Cyndi Lauper. And she has a song, which we're not going to play today, though, called True Colours.
Yes.
And it's sort of been a gay anthem, although it wasn't originally written as such. Apparently, Cyndi elaborated that the song had resonated with her because of the recent death of her friend, Gregory Natal, from HIV/AIDS. And while not directly promoting a song defending GLBT rights, Cyndi Lauper was pleased that her song was adopted by our community. And a few years later, Cyndi Lauper co-founded the True Colours Fund, a non-profit organisation dedicated to eradicating LGBT youth homelessness.
That's right. The sales of that CD were in the millions, basically, and she put it all into homes for homeless young gay and lesbian people. Great, great lady for doing that. And a very interesting autobiography she has too, because I've read it and it's really wonderful.
And a fairly unique voice.
And a very unique voice, yes. But she had a hard life when she was growing up.
Later on our show today, we'll be talking about a couple of, or in fact three people, who have represented themselves to fame with their alter egos. Matt Lucas, John Inman, and Harris Milstead. But you're going to have to work out and stay tuned to find out who he is. And we'll also be talking in our last little grab about a couple of events that are recurring. Next weekend, we've got Labor Day and the anniversary of a partnerships register here in Victoria. And we'll talk about that in the general context of gay equality rights.
Under the topic of Let Them Eat Cake.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks very much for being with us. And if you'd like to communicate with us...
We will allow you to. And the method upon which we allow you to communicate with us is email. And you can send us an email at beenthere@joy.org.au.
Oh, well spoken.
Written...
And authorized.
Spoken and whatever the other bit is.
Written, authorized and spoken by. Yeah.
Blah, blah, on behalf of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, talking about blah, blah, blah. We were going to talk about a very interesting man.
Well, why don't we just hear a little piece of something that, which totally identifies him, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you yourself will know who we're going to be talking about.
Grace Brothers Men's Department.
Mr. Humphreys, are you free?
I'm free.
Forward, please.
Mind the door.
What?
Are you being served, sir?
I'm Humphreys and I'm free.
Are you being served, sir?
What would you like to see? If you'd like some swimming trunks, we've got them plain or spotty. We've also got some see-through that really tan your...
beachwear.
Oh, these are gay. There's plenty around the back. And if you'd like a bit of flash, then try a plastic mag.
What?
Are you being served, sir?
I'm Humphreys and I'm free.
Are you being served, sir?
What would you like to see?
Well, indeed, who else but John Inman? And with Mr. Humphreys. But he's got a very interesting history, though, hasn't
he,
Gordon?
But part about that was I'm free bit.
The members of the campaign
for homosexual equality, they hated it. They said it was stereotyping gay people. They didn't like it at all.
Yeah, because the whole of the show, which was Are You Being Served, included extreme characters.
Oh, they were all extreme. Mr. Humphreys, and there was old Mr. Grace, who always had a lovely little blonde on his arm and all the rest of it, and he was going off to his office.
Mrs. Slocum with her pussy.
But all the characters were stereotypes.
That's right.
It wasn't just him.
True.
They were all turned up to 11. Yeah. And, well, I guess the fact that it was 1972 probably plays a factor. You wouldn't want to see that show now.
Well, you can.
You can watch it, but
they
it's
tried
not being
to
produced.
Revive it in another format, and it didn't work.
There was a particular tolerance in the English psyche that allowed all those extremes to be portrayed on stage, and you would laugh with them, but not particularly at them. Or if you did at them, laugh at them, it wasn't in a nasty way.
But apparently that character was one of the things that John Inman did when he was actually working in a store as a window dresser. He would stand in the, according to this, he would stand in the window, struggling to keep a straight face as he flaunted a sign that said, "Available in other colours."
Which he probably wasn't.
Which he probably wasn't. But he trained as a window dresser in a store, so he knew a little bit about retailing, and that character was obviously something that he'd seen.
And he would have seen other window dressers
doing
and floor walkers
from
the menswear store.
Yeah.
But apparently by the age of 6, he was escaping into theatrical fantasies and occasionally, apparently, taking Daddy's mother's blackout curtains and giving impromptu shows for the neighbours. The writing of the actual series was apparently a little bit crude and formulaic, and the situation's obvious, and the characters was all...
To me, it was like it was a bit like a pantomime.
Yeah,
on television. That was when I watched it. I thought very funny, but it was like an outrageous camp pantomime.
It was, yeah, and Mr. Humphreys himself always had not double entendres, but triple entendres. You know, there was
everything that
double loaded.
I think every word that came out of his mouth was a double entendre.
I suppose in some ways it allowed the public to take to their hearts an overtly camp TV actor.
Yeah.
He wasn't threatening to them. It was comical, and they could recognise and go along with the farce.
They may not have noticed at the time, but it's sort of a one-joke premise, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yet week by week, they would just change little situations.
That's a thing with the English sense of humour, or the English way of humour. Some of their comedians would come on and say the same thing week after week after week, with perhaps a right different inflection, but it always got a laugh. And the English people expected them to say it.
Yeah, that was their signature.
That's a signature thing that they do in English comedy.
It's a whole other reality, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But the funny part about it was that at one stage he said that he was straight and he was in relationship with a woman for 28 years, but nobody could find the woman.
He might have had an episode before saying that.
But then again, all pretense was cast aside and he married his male companion of 33 years, Ron Lynch, in a civil partnership ceremony in Westminster to registry office. So there you go. He tried to pretend he was nobody could find the woman anyhow, but they knew that he was probably living with this Ron Lynch anyhow. Mm.
He died at the age of 72, suffering from the ravages of Hep A, which is a liver disease. Perhaps this is a polite way of saying that he hit the bottle more than his body could cope, and his liver and bits and pieces failed him.
Yeah.
Someone else who we're talking about today.
My name is Dafydd, and I am a gay. As I was just saying to my Mavanwy, it's such a shame that I'm the only gay in this village. Can I have another Bacardi and Coke, please, Mavanwy? What an effeminate drink. Oh, I just dream of the day when I could meet other gays who understand what it's like to be a gay. I am the only gay man in this village, and that's that. You're probably just a little bit poor.
So who are we talking about there? We're talking about Matt Lucas.
Yes, he had a birthday on the 5th of March, 1974.
5th of March?
Yeah. Oh. Yes, that was another sort of one-character person too.
I'm just processing from that little clip. Because back in the day, I quite enjoyed a Bacardi and Coke. I don't know whether I'm offended or not.
Very gay drink.
but Matt Lucas had a range of characters.
Oh, yes.
And he still does. He's still funny.
And Andy Pipkin, Andy in the wheelchair.
In the wheelchair, which was...
When David Williams, his acting partner...
Wasn't looking.
Andy would get out of the wheelchair and go do outrageous things and come back.
Jumping off the 10-metre tower into the pool and everything a couple of times, then sitting back in the pool in the chair.
And the teenage Bristol girl, Vicky Pollard.
Oh, Vicky Pollard. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah.
Homosexual Dafydd, who we just heard.
Yes, that's right.
He was really homophobic, but, you know, internalised. And the insensitive Slimming Club organiser, Marjorie Dawes.
She was very funny, but she is... repeated here, I think it's on Cravings, because on our show Cravings on Sunday afternoon, they always say Cravings.
Yeah.
Cravings. That's Marjorie Dore out of...
Is it?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's Marjorie Dore.
Right.
She used to say that
then.
On the thing. You could check that with...
Pete Dillon.
It sounds very much like Marjorie Dore saying Cravings.
Matt Lucas has got this shiny dome, and
He has alopecia absoluta.
Alopecia, jaunty alopecia.
Yes, that one, yes. But which means you're completely hairless, and he started losing his hair when he was sick.
That's how he gets away with baby George Dawes. Yes, I can imagine him sort of being an adult baby with a bald head there.
Yeah, yeah. Wearing a outsized romper suit.
So there you are. We've got these two characters.
I did see him once here in Australia when he came out here. And I was dining in a French restaurant in Toorak Road and waiting for the meal. And then he walked in and we waited more for the meal because everybody was rushing around him. He seemed to be a very nice person. He appeared in Kath and Kim.
Did he?
Yeah. He was in one episode of Kath and Kim.
Oh, no.
Is he that famous?
Oh, yes, that famous. Yes, yes.
Are you actually offended by the characters he represents, the gay characters, or John Unman?
No, not really. Why would you be? You know they're characters.
Well, they're extreme stereotypes.
Extreme stereotypes. I've met a couple of people like Mr. Humphreys. Very extreme, that's all right. That's the way people are. You know, you accept people the way they are.
We had... Who was Freddie here at Maya in Melbourne?
Oh, Freddie Rasmus.
Yeah?
Yes. Freddie was the window dresser. He's the one that bought in the Christmas windows. First country in the world to ever have a Christmas window display without any merchandise in it. And it went round the world.
Still brought the people in.
Yeah, and so window dressers are... Okay.
Yes, that's right. A bit flamboyant.
They're the cornerstone of our society.
Would you say so?
Oh, I just did.
Oh, good.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Put down the knitting, the book and the broom. It's time for a holiday. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Come taste the wine, come hear the band, come blow your horn, start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting. What good's permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away? Life is a cabaret, old chum, so come to the cabaret. Have this girlfriend known as Elsie, with whom I shared four sordid rooms in Chelsea. She wasn't what you'd call a blushing flower. As a matter of fact, she rented by the hour. The day she died, the neighbors came to snicker. Well, that's what comes from too much pills and liquor. But when I saw her laid out like a queen, she was the happiest corpse I'd ever seen. I think of Elsie to this very day. I remember how she turned to me and said, what good is sitting all alone in your room? Come, hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. And as for me, I made my mind up back in Chelsea when I go. I'm going like Elsie. Start by admitting from cradle to tomb, it isn't that long a stay. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum. And I love a cabaret.
Bringing a little joy to your life. Joy 94.9.
Who was that singer you were playing?
Well, we had been listening.
I know. It's Lisa Minnelli.
Lisa Minnelli.
Yeah. Because I remember that from her song.
Oh, right.
Was it Liza with a Z, not Lisa with an S?
That's right, yes. She was the youngest ever Tony Award winner on Broadway with a show called Flora of the Red Menace, which was her debut on Broadway.
Oh, right.
When she was only about 15 or 16 or something, rather.
Wow.
And she's the youngest person ever to win a Tony Award.
No, I thought she would have been on stage with her mother, Judy Garland.
Oh, she appeared on the Judy Garland show, I know that much, but she
which was black and white, so we wouldn't have been seeing the ruby bed slippers.
No, they wouldn't have. No, no.
Yes.
I'm getting a look. But Judy Garland Dorothy.
But the
our
big
friend.
The film.
Yes.
Film Philip.
Was colour.
It was colour.
It was probably Technicolour.
Yes.
It didn't start in colour.
No.
It started in black and white in Kansas, which has a certain poetic justice. Not much colour in Kansas.
I'm just reading a book about Dorothy. It's a sort of a thing about Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. And I'm up to the part where now they're talking about putting the munchkins off the movie into their costumes at the studio, and how they if they wanted to go to the loo, they had to be undressed because of the costumes that they were given, and they had to be, and security guards would pick up a munchkin under each arm and toff them off to the loo.
That just makes us remember that there was an expression, if you were asking if someone was gay, you would say, are they a friend of Dorothy?
Yeah, because Dorothy was an icon.
There was that expression that was used in a long time ago,
yeah,
after the film came out, of course. Are you a friend of Dorothy? And you didn't actually have to say, which Dorothy? Everybody knew expression.
But if you did say which Dorothy, the answer would be no.
Precisely.
You're not a friend.
You're not a friend. Yes. That's right, yeah.
Well, now you might think of Dorothy the dinosaur.
Yes.
Life is much more confusing these days.
But see, that song from Cabaret, that part also won her an Academy Award for that part as Sally Bowles in 1972.
Now, that was from the film and the show Cabaret, which was an extract of a story, or a particular line in the story by Christopher Isherwood.
I am a camera.
But and it was set in Germany in the late 30s.
Yeah.
And that particular society was going through the trials and tribulations of the arrival of a dictator in the form of Adolf Hitler.
Well, he was already a dictator at that time. Mm. Yeah, yeah. But
you don't have to add tater to the end of that.
You mean he was a dick?
He was a dick from the start. Face it.
But it was interesting how the show Cabaret portrayed the liberation that was experienced by the community of Germany at that particular time. It was sort of the golden years after the First World War, before the Second World War ever came along, in which they hoped would never come. But Germany was taking it to being the most liberated modern society.
That's right. The funny part about it is that Sally Bowles is mentioned once in one paragraph in the book. That's all it is. She's just a cabaret singer that he'd gone off to meet. Yeah.
So what was the book called?
I Am a Camera.
Did they just write that to see what developed?
Yes, I think so.
Well, back to that song, though. Hmm. She is almost yelling towards the end and in total control of her voice.
Yeah, she was an open...
Just the power.
The Americans sing with an open throat. They call it open throat singing or something, rather, which that's where they get their power from.
Yeah, but... As an example, like, there wouldn't be many people that could sing that song the way she just did for us.
Oh, no, she was an inborn talent, you know.
She probably couldn't escape with
a mother like she had, Judy Garland, and her father was an artistic man as well. But she had a brother, and she's got a sister, half-sister and a half-brother.
Lorna Luft
and Joey Luft.
Lorna is quite the performer.
She's got a good voice, actually. Yeah. And then she's also got another half-sister, Tina Arena.
That's
Tiny Tina, who is the daughter of Minnelli's second marriage. So
did he know he was gay?
Well, he used to.
He seemed to have a lot of kids.
He used to go to all the gay parties.
Enough said. However, Liza herself married quite a few times.
She married a gay guy too.
She did. In fact, she married a gay Australian in the name of Peter Allen.
Did he know he was gay?
He did.
At the time?
But she didn't. Mm. And apparently she's quoted as saying, I married Peter and he didn't tell me he was gay. Everyone knew but me. And I found out, well, let me put it this way, I'll never surprise anybody coming home as long as I live. I call first.
Yes, now,
Peter Allen could get all his boyfriends out of the place before the wife came
Well, in
home.
The story, she walked in on Peter Allen in bed with a boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
She came in. That's what she's referring to in that. It was shown in the story of Peter Allen when it was on television a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but it was very well done.
It was very well done.
Miniseries.
Yep.
Liza toured Australia in 2009, appearing on Australian Idol, and she's...
I saw her at the Palais, actually.
Yeah.
She worked at the Palais. did a show, a couple of shows.
But once again, she seemed to be influenced by the community around her at the time and got into some very bad habits. Her mother, of course, was totally hooked on uppers and downers by the film industry.
Because of the studio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Liza herself had problems and had to go to the Betty Ford Clinic. And
she would have been there with a lot of other people.
She would have been. Well, part of her mob that she was knocking around with included Andy Warhol, Bianca Jagger, and a few of others of those sort of people. And they were
racy crowd.
The racy crowd, yes, yes. Yeah. We're not allowed to say anything positive about the racy things that they got up to. So that's why we're talking in
riddles.
Liza Minnelli, throughout her lifetime, has served various charities and causes which she considered important. And she was the person who told Elizabeth Taylor about HIV/AIDS while talking about their mutual friend, Rock Hudson. And that led to Liz Taylor setting up the American Foundation for AIDS Research.
In Amba.
She put it, they raised millions of dollars for it because the government refused to, well, Ronald Reagan wouldn't even say the word AIDS, let's face it, until the day he resigned, I think it was. In the final week, he sort of mentioned it. And it was up to the people like Liza Minnelli and and Elizabeth Taylor and Elton John and those sort of people that raised the money for AIDS research, which was not coming from the government.
But it was good that those individuals saw the urgency.
That's right. Yep.
And had the star power
to raise
to
the money.
To do better than the president would have done.
That's
anyway.
Right. Yep, I think so.
I guess something we can take comfort in today is that we survived presidents in the past that we're not particularly proud of, and maybe we'll survive this one.
Hopefully.
Either that or we'll all go up in this big poof of smoke.
Yes, that's true.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil, been there, done that, Joy 94.9. Let us take a pause while we catch our wits and we'll hear some messages.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Indeed, indeed. Who was that? That was Divine singing.
That actually was Harris Glenn Milstead.
Better known as Divine.
as Divine, because you used Harris Glenn Milstead before and asked people if they knew who he was. So we better go back and remind them of what you had said earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's Gordon, and I'm Chris.
That leaves me to be Phil.
Indeed, yes. And you're listening to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9. But why are we talking about Glenn Milstead?
Because he died on March the 7th, 1988.
If you've ever seen him in the movies, is an over-the-top, once again, a caricature of drag queens. And he was known, he called himself a drag artist.
Yep, he said he wasn't transgender, he wasn't anything else, he was gay. But he was a rather large man too, and he was actually in one of the versions of Hairspray as Mrs. Tumblad, and John Waters.
Oh, the pencil, filmmaker.
The filmmaker.
The pencil-thin moustache.
They were both from Baltimore.
Yeah.
And so they knew one another, and that's why John Waters made a couple of films. Polyester was one of them. And Hairspray itself.
I don't think Divine would have had a very long career without help from John Waters.
No.
Because it's a fairly unique character.
Yes. It was a pretty ugly character at times, was too.
In your
especially,
face.
Especially as he was portrayed in the movies.
Oh, yeah. Not attractive. Well, he was a very, very large person at this stage, 140 kilogram sex symbol. But as he said, drag is my work clothes. I only put them on when someone pays me to do it. As Divine, I suppose in some ways he was an audacious symbol of man's quest for liberty and freedom. He was also described as the goddess of gross, punk elephant, big bad mama of the midnight movies, and a Miss Piggy for the blissfully depraved. So a reputation preceded him and has followed him after his death. As a young kid, he was bullied at high school because of his weight and perceived effeminacy. Mm. And he later reminisced he wasn't rough and tough, but instead loved painting.
Oh, don't look at me.
And I always loved flowers and things. Mm. Oh, God, Gordon. When Glenn Milstead was 17, his parents sent him to a psychiatrist because they didn't know what was wrong with him being, as he were, interested in other than boy things. Milstead first realised his sexual attraction to men as well as women, which was sort of taboo in the American society at that particular time. What did they do to him there? I don't know.
He kept working. He worked a lot on stage, in films, different bits and pieces.
Yeah.
He always seemed to be doing something.
Never saw him in a Disney movie. Why is that?
The screens weren't big enough.
Oh, okay.
To fit him
He's
in.
He's a fan of CinemaScope.
Yes.
He went to London. He went to he went to Heaven, which is the name of a gay club in London. Mm-hmm. So he went to Heaven before he went to Heaven. But once again, in his career as a drag artist, he avoided actually confirming that he was gay or discussing gay rights because of the advice of his manager, who reckoned that he might have had a negative effect on his career, knowing that he was a gay person. But as an extremely overt drag artist, that was a different kettle of fish.
People sort of didn't quite know how to take drag in America, I think. He died quite young, too. He was only 42 when he died, but he died of an enlarged heart. So I don't
Which
know.
Is some mostly times congenital. We've got another couple of things that have happened in March. We've got the Labor Day event. And we've also got, on the 14th of the 3rd, 2008, a bill was passed in Victoria allowing registration of partnerships. Not necessarily gay partnerships, but partnerships that weren't evidenced by a marriage certificate.
That's right.
And that was an early attempt to put a certain amount of rights available for gay people.
Yes, because you could be a de facto couple, like a straight couple de facto, and create a register so that if anything happened, you were... You still had medical rights and property rights as well. And this is what the same sex couples could do as well, sign that register, and then they had property rights over the if anything happened.
It wasn't particularly wonderful for our community because there are so many Australian rules, regulations, acts of parliament and things that refer only to married couples, in brackets, evidenced by a marriage certificate.
Yeah,
thank you, John Howard.
When you see what happened at the Sydney Mardi Gras parade with all the thing for equal love and equality and all the rest of it, surely somebody must have been looking at that and saying, yes, they have to have it.
The trouble is the people who needed to see those stories and see how many people support what we're basically talking is equal rights, which is a concept that goes back to the 60s.
Yes.
People then wanted equal rights and they got some.
They got some, yeah.
But yeah, the Corey Bernardis of the world and the people from northern Queensland probably weren't tuned in.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I guess the Mardi Gras does preach to the converted.
It does, but we need to convert some of the people who really need to be a bit more inclusive.
Next Monday is a public holiday for some of us.
It's the 8-hour day, celebrating the 8-hour day.
And this is a worldwide event, although celebrated on various parts of the calendar. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's on the 1st of May, May Day.
May Day, yeah.
Sometimes it's for different states of Australia, it's in other times of the year. But we are having it next Monday, the 13th of March. A little bit of history, please, Gordon. How many hours did workers used to work back in the days before machines?
Between 10 and 12 hours a day.
How many days a week?
6 days a week, because they had to go to church on Sunday.
So that was 60 hours a week of labouring.
And very, very poorly paid.
And very, very dirty and heavy work. And not at all glam. What sort of people were really getting cross and cranky about?
Stonemasons that were building the Parliament House and those sort of places.
Parliament House here in Victoria?
And they went on strike?
I suppose it was dirty, dusty.
Dusty, hard work. Well, you've got to think that they didn't have the equipment that they have these days for lifting those bloody great big blocks of bluestone.
Or cutting them into shape.
Yeah, that's right. So they went on strike and they demanded 8 hours sleep, 8 hours work and 8 hours of relaxation.
But there was also no dole or social security.
No,
so people were forced by their own circumstances to actually put in 6 days of work. Mm. But gradually, the working week was dropped down to 8 hours a day times number of days, and we got to a...
The five-day working week became the 40-hour working week, yeah.
If you're having your day off on Monday, enjoy it and be thankful for those people that went before you, the pioneers.
That's right, yeah. See, when I first started working, it was Saturday morning was a very busy morning for shops, but you shut at 12 o'clock and then the rest of the weekend was yours. It was whatever you wanted to do.
You'd go to the football.
You could go to the footy and you could go to the beach in summer and you could do all those sort of things, cricket or whatever you wanted to do. But these days, they play football at night time now, so you can go anyhow, you know. But it's,
Well, if you're listening to us next week, we'll be here on the Monday.
Oh, yes. We'll have a program next week, yes.
But, of course, it'll be,
A replay of this. Because it's midnight Sunday, isn't
that's
it?
Right, yes.
That's right.
That's right, yes.
But we will be with you next Tuesday for our 2300 hours broadcast. So
no, it's only 1 hour. I couldn't work for 2300 hours. That's just too much.
That's at 2300 hours, yeah. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Gordon. Time for us to go. Cheerio from Chris.
Gordon.
And Phil.
Bye for now.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.